ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 ॐ नमो
So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, text number 19. Tada rajastamo bhavaha kama lobha dayaschaye cheta eter anavidham stitam sattve prasidati Tada
Tada!
At that time.
At that time.
Rajaha.
Rajaha.
The mode of passion.
The mode of passion.
Tamaha.
Tamaha.
The mode of ignorance.
The mode of ignorance.
Bhavaha.
Bhavaha.
The situation.
The situation.
Kama.
Kama.
Lust and desire.
Lust and desire.
Lobha.
Lobha.
Hankering.
Hankering.
Adayaha.
Adayaha.
Others.
Others.
Cha,
cha,
and,
ye,
ye, whatever,
whatever,
sorry, whatever they are,
whatever they are,
chetaha,
chetaha,
the mind,
mind,
etahai,
etahai,
by these, anavidham,
anavidham,
without being affected,
without being affected,
stitam,
stitam,
being fixed.
Being fixed.
Sattve.
Sattve.
In the mode of goodness.
In the mode of goodness.
Prasidati.
Prasidati.
Thus becomes fully satisfied.
Thus becomes fully satisfied.
Translation. As soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, the effects of nature's modes of passion and ignorance, such as lust, desire and hankering, disappear from the heart. Then the devotee is established in goodness and becomes completely happy. In response, please. As soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart,
as soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart,
the effects of nature's modes of passion and ignorance,
the effects of nature's modes of passion and ignorance,
such as lust, desire and hankering,
such as lust, desire and hankering,
disappear from the heart.
Disappear from the heart.
Then the devotee is established in goodness.
Then the devotee is established in goodness.
And becomes completely happy.
And becomes completely happy.
Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila
Prabhupada Ki Jai.
A living being in his normal constitutional position is fully satisfied in spiritual bliss. This state of existence is called Brahma Bhuta. Srimad Bhagavatam 4.30.20 or Atmanande, or the state of self-realization, self-satisfaction. This self-satisfaction is not like the satisfaction of the inactive fool. The inactive fool is in the state of foolish ignorance, whereas the self-satisfied Atmanandi is transcendental to the material state of existence. This stage of perfection is attained as soon as one is fixed in irrevocable devotional service. Devotional service is not inactivity, but the unallied activity of the soul. The soul's activity becomes adulterated in contact with matter, and as such, the diseased activities are expressed in the form of lust, desire, hankering, inactivity, foolishness, and sleep. The effect of devotional service becomes manifest by complete elimination of these effects of passion and ignorance. The devotee is fixed at once in the mode of goodness, and he makes further progress to rise to the position of Vasudev, or the state of unmixed sattva, or shuddha sattva. Only in this shuddha sattva state Can one always see Krishna eye to eye by dint of pure affection for the Lord? A devotee is always in the mode of unalloyed goodness, therefore he harms no one. But the dumb devotee, however educated he may be, is always harmful. A devotee is neither foolish nor passionate. The harmful, foolish and passionate cannot be devotees of the Lord, however they may advertise themselves as devotees by outward dress. A devotee is always qualified with all good qualities of God. Quantitatively, such qualifications may be different, but quantitatively, both the Lord and the devotee are one and the same. Om Gyanti Mirandasya Gyanjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Galitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tidamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pastachare Shatarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudi Gaura Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So yesterday we did, it's the 18th verse, today is the 19th verse, and we were speaking how by regularly hearing, by proper hearing, then we naturally advance in devotional service. And now it's speaking about the effects, how practically that, or theoretically anyway, how the hearing purifies the heart of these low modes of nature. And today we're talking over this retreat about relationships. So in the spiritual world there's no problem with relationships because they're all on the platform of Shuddha-Sattva, that means pure goodness. There's no taint of these low modes. And therefore, they act on the platform of the soul, which is completely pure. Both the soul and the Supreme Soul, Krishna, free from all untoward qualities. And therefore, this is called pure goodness. And in that state, both the Lord and the living entity experience transcendental happiness, which is actually ever-increasing. And so it's the... As we said yesterday, these lower modes of nature are the things which contaminate us. And that contamination is causing the devotees, is actually the barrier or the problem with relationships. Goodness is even a stepping stone to the higher platform of Shuddha-Sattva. Goodness means we follow rules and regulations that are sent by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in order that we can make further advancement. But also, mode of goodness is not free from these lower modes. There are some taints of the lower modes there. And so, only by devotional service can we actually get completely free. So Prabhupada gave us the perfect formula, and if we follow that formula, then automatically we'll become purified of the lower modes, attain to the platform of pure goodness and render devotional service. We may think, what am I rendering now? yes, we're rendering devotional service, but it's through the medium of the spiritual master. The spiritual master is... teaching us how to render devotional service on the pure platform. And by that instruction, we become situated on the pure platform. To the degree we follow, that's what Srila Prabhupada said, to, you know, What is a pure devotee? One devotee asked. He said that to the degree you follow my instructions, to that degree you're a pure devotee. But, you know, that's mechanical, that's Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. It's not really us. It's actually goodness because we've agreed to do that because we want to advance in devotional service. Yeah? But Shuddhasava means we actually develop a relationship with Krishna and we want to serve Krishna to please Krishna and nothing else. And so, while ever there's some lust or desire within the heart, then this will stop us from actually reciprocating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and with his parts and parcels, the other devotees. Yes, so these lower modes are the cause of our disturbance. And when we get rid of the lower modes, it says we automatically become situated in happiness. This is the natural condition of the soul. Another explanation is, if we control the mind, which is the same thing, controlling the mind means, Prabhupada says, reaching the super soul. Automatically, when the mind's controlled, the soul acts on its natural constitutional position. And so, this is the philosophy, but what about now? You know, we may want to act on that platform, but actually, just one more thing is that Prabhupada said, if we chant 16 rounds, and we follow four regulative principles, and we follow the instructions of the spiritual master, this is pure devotional service. So, pure devotional service is available to us now. And he gives the example, but it's not ripe. It becomes ripe when it's natural, when it's spontaneous. Just like a spontaneity that a young man feels for a young woman and vice versa. We don't have to learn it, it's just natural. And so that's the nature of the soul. Devotional service and relationship with devotees is natural. So Prabhupada says, in this state of following rules and regulations, it's we're like an unripe mango, a green mango. And so if we had a choice, which would we choose? The yellow, succulent, juicy mango or the green mango? I mean, you can use green mango for chutney. But it's not like the real mango. When it's ripe, it's much more tasty. And so I thought I'd talk a little bit about qualities, that are just one or two qualities that help us to, you know, reciprocate with other devotees. And one quality is forgiveness, which Jnana Maharaj mentioned just before he went out. So I'll just find the section. Oh, here we are. So in Yashyastira Bhaktir Bhagavatiya Kinshina, this verse explains how that by performing devotional service, all the good qualities of the demigods, the devotees, in other words, demigods are devotees, are manifested in a living entity. And that, you know, if we don't perform devotional service, we can't develop any good qualities. Is that right?
Yes.
But yeah, you know, if we go out and we meet people, people sometimes think, wow, this person's got really good qualities. I wish I had these qualities. If they take to devotional service, then they'll advance like anything. Has anybody had that experience? But the thing is, what this verse is saying is that because they're not connected with Krishna, at some point, under certain conditions, under certain pressures, those good qualities won't be there. Because they're satisfying their own desires. They may want to be seen as a very generous person, a very powerful person, this type of person. So it's not really a good quality. So a devotee is different. He says, anger is the worst thing for a devotee, or one of the worst qualities. And, when a materialist will become angry when tested, A devotee, if he's properly situated, he won't become angry, because he'll see everything as a service to Krishna. So it says that everything's defeated by anger. If we become angry, it means we're not properly fixed or understanding the process of devotional service and the process of purification. And so one way to overcome anger is forgiveness. In Bhagavad Gita it mentions tolerance. Tolerance is like the first stage. First we tolerate. Don't say anything. You know what it's like. But that, we might still, not really get on with that person. You know, we may still have some internal barriers between the relationship. And so our forgiveness is the next stage of tolerance. So that means we actively... What does forgiveness mean? What's the, practically?
Kind of like you put aside whatever the issue is, and then, like they say, hate the sin, not the sinner. Mm. So you put aside whatever the issue is, and you still want to continue with a relationship with that person.
Yeah. So, I say more in depth, it means that forgiveness means that, you say in the material world, forgive and forget. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Forget it. Just let it go and forgive. But actually, another way is forgive and don't forget. Because sometimes we have to forgive a situation where the person's done wrong. So this throws some light on forgiveness. Forgiveness is not sort of out there, it's in here. That we forgive that person, now he's completely absolved. No, we're saying we can't forgive properly. We're not going to forgive somebody who's committed a heinous act, if we think on that platform, are we? You can't. But the thing is, forgiveness means releasing ourselves. You know, we forgive, we don't hold, we see, like you said, see the sin and not the sinner. But still, we forgive for our own benefit, to release ourselves. And that person then may still have to go some rectification. So that's like, detachment. And I've got some quotes on forgiveness, and they're not necessarily, well, I don't think any of them, except one or two are actually Vaishnava quotes, but, it does still help us to understand the process and how it releases us. So I'll just find the section and we can read some quotes. To err is human, to forgive is divine. So we're devotees, definitely we should forgive. This is by Alexander Pope. Does anybody know Alexander Pope? No. One of the keys to happiness is
forgiveness.
A bad memory. Sometimes we have really good memories. You know what I mean? True forgiveness is when you can say thank you for that experience. This is Winifred Ofra. Does anyone know Winifred Ofra?
Yeah. Opera.
Opera.
She's extremely.
Oh yeah, it's opera, yeah. Winfrey Opera. Resentment is like drinking poison and then hoping it will kill your enemies. That's Nelson Mandela. And he's really the epitome of that particular quality.
Yeah.
Nelson Mandela, we think, somebody has got more ladders than us, or they've got, somebody's got a little bit of a tip off or something which doesn't really mean anything. And, it can last for a lifetime. But, Nelson Mandela, I don't know really the whole life story, but I know one little bit is that, he was put into jail for 30 years.
Yeah.
For what sort of crime? Because he disagreed with the government, I think. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We've got to be careful. We don't do like that, you know. If you disagree with the GBC.
It was a little more than that. I mean, with Nelson Mandela. But still, yeah.
Would you like to...
He said, made a pronouncement, that at a certain time, every black person in the country should turn, on a certain day, should turn around and kill the white person next to them.
Hare Krishna.
Anyway, but it was also very heavily politically motivated too. Mm. But he wasn't just a gentleman, although he was very clever and spiritually minded. Mm.
That's thrown the whole thing, hasn't it? Don't be laughing. Right, anyway, carry on. Grudges are for those who insist they have that they own. Sorry, I'll start again. Grudges are for those who insist that they are owed something. Forgiveness, however, is for those who are substantial enough to move on. This is actually vice in our philosophy, it's just in a different wrapper. You know, how do we apply that in vice in our philosophy? That, you know, we're responsible for our actions, why dwell on them, move on, carry on. You know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said that we have no enemies except the mind. And we should think of doing the ultimate good for our worst enemy. It's impossible to do that actually unless we have ultimately Vaishnava philosophy. But sometimes, like we were saying earlier, it will actually. So these are helpful to you know, because we're used to dealing on that platform. They're helpful to. But really, if we can apply Vaishnava philosophy in every situation, then that's much better. We said yesterday, you know, Tatedu Kampamsu Samikshamano. I'll read that verse actually. Yeah, we'll read the verse and then the translation by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words and mind, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami explains in his commentary that just as a legitimate son has simply to remain alive to gain inheritance from his father, one who simply remains alive in Krishna consciousness, following the relative principles of Bhakti Yoga, automatically becomes eligible to receive the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, he will be promoted to the kingdom of God. The word su samikshamana indicates that the devotee earnestly awaits the mercy of the Supreme Lord, even while suffering the painful effects of previous sinful activities. Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that a devotee who fully surrenders unto him is no longer liable to suffer the reactions of his previous karma. However, because in his mind a devotee will still maintain the remnants of his previous sinful mentality, the Lord removes the last vestiges of the enjoying spirit by giving his devotee punishments that may sometimes resemble sinful reactions. The purpose of the entire creation of God is to rectify the living entity's tendency to enjoy without the Lord. And therefore, the particular punishment given for a sinful activity is specifically designed to curtail the mentality that produced that activity. Although a devotee has surrendered to the Lord's devotional service, until he is completely perfect in Krishna consciousness, he may maintain a slight inclination to enjoy false happiness of this world. The Lord therefore creates a particular situation to eradicate the remaining enjoying spirit. This unhappiness suffered by a sincere devotee is not technically karmic reaction. It is rather the Lord's special mercy for inducing his devotee to completely let go of the material world and return back home to Godhead. You know, forgiveness, before we can really, what's the most important of all the different ways we forgive? It's mentioned first that to forgive ourselves. We're conditioned souls and we're at a certain level. And sometimes when we, you know, especially in the beginning of devotional service, we can, you know, see that we can't follow everything. And that, you know, we feel fallen, or it may stop our enthusiasm. We're hearing that yesterday, last night. Devotees were pouring out the heart about certain things. But, you know, this is not what the Srimad Bhagavatam says about it. In the 11th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, if I can remember it properly, it says, my devotee may be attached to sense gratification and be unhappy about it. But he should know that he should remain happy in devotional service, knowing that, you know, this sense gratification is ultimately going to bring him misery. But even though he can't give it up, he should remain enthusiastic and happy in devotional service. Positive, in other words. And in due course of time, that, you know, those particular qualities will be purified away. So I found that quite helpful, to actually not dwell on our negative side, but to dwell on our positive. We're actually getting out of the material energy, so we have to be like that, we have to see forward. Don't meditate on the bad qualities so much, but do the positive. Self-forgiveness, we'll say a bit more on that. Lord Chaitanya, he gave a nice direction about Jagai and Madai. Jagai and Madai, well, they did everything. They wrote the book on offences, aparads, you name it, and they did it. And so, but Lord Chaitanya, when once he actually forgave them, he actually said to the devotees, we shouldn't actually look on their past activities anymore. You know, they promised to go forward and not commit those activities anymore. So, you know, in other words, they're seen as a devotee. So, in a wise apijet sudarachana, even if we sometimes see a devotee, he may actually have committed an untowards activity. And actually, I was reading the Acharya's commentary on that, and said, even if, one Acharya said, even if this devotee runs off with other men's wives, and he's constantly doing that, he shouldn't be actually, defamed, because, providing he's situated, he's trying his best to perform devotional service, and become purified. I mean, that's an extreme thing, we should be careful. But this is what the Acharya say. It's more or less making the point that, you know, in this material world, we shouldn't be surprised what we may do. The material energy is so powerful. You know, inattention, and we can be caught up in so many sinful activities. And so, you know, we have a positive outlook towards other devotees. A strong person may say sorry, but a stronger person forgives. Forgiving means releasing ourselves from being a victim of the person that we are actually meditating on. When we actually meditate on what somebody has actually done to us, that person is not affected. We are affected. Don't become a victim of that. We are chained to the past, and we are freed from all hope of a better past. You know, sometimes we're dwelling and we're trying to make the past better. Has anybody done that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, if only I'd have done that. Oh, if only I'd have done that.
What can we do? The past is a past. In fact, if you notice the course of that, it says don't dream about the past that sleeps. And to some extent, don't worry about the past that sleeps, nor the future dream at all. But live with times it all with you, and progress you shall call. Gandhi quotes. You know, in the Bible it says an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Is that right? an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But Gandhi says, you know, if we follow that principle, which is mentioned in the Bible, he says the whole world would be blind and toothless. You know, this is Krishna, this is God speaking. Krishna speaking is talking about the reactions for the sinful activities we do, but not that we should actually take that attitude. Abraham Lincoln. Anyway, I shouldn't really use these names in Bhagavatam class, but I'm just, you know, pointing out that even those who are not necessarily following this path of bhakti yoga, maybe to some degree, I don't know, but it says mercy is more powerful than punishment. It's true, isn't it? When we forgive somebody, they just melt.
Yeah.
You know, they don't know what to say. Completely disarm them. Even in the judicial system, they've got, you know, this leniency for somebody who was actually being rectified. Yeah, they don't actually continue to to punish. To err is human. To forgive. Oh, we've gone through that. So anyway, I just thought we'd go through this part of forgiveness. That forgiveness also affects our health. If we can forgive ourselves, then we can forgive others. And our philosophy is to be hard on ourselves but soft on others. But that's a different thing. You know, we make sure we follow the process properly. But we're not going to do everything perfectly, so we forgive ourselves some temporary fault and we carry on. What were we talking about just before that now?
You talk about Abraham Lincoln said that mercy was more powerful than punishment.
Forgiveness. I was going to speak a little bit more about forgiveness.
You were saying about it affects our health also.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's the point. Thank you. That as well as affecting us mentally, maybe even intellectually, it affects us physically. Has anybody that feeling where you've got a real, yeah. You know, when you've got
butterflies?
It's sort of painful. It's not pain, but it's like a numbness. And when you go, so that's the effect of holding grudges or having some animosity about a certain situation. And there was one doctor in the States, and he had a success rate of 50% for curing people who got terminal cancer. So terminal cancer means that, you know, even the allopaths, you know, they can't do anything. That's usually the last line of defence, use a knife, isn't it? But when that fails, there's nothing left. So he had a success rate of curing 50% of those, no hope with cancer. And the first thing he said to them, when they came to for interview, he said, have you forgiven? You know, have you let go? This feeling here, then eventually it sort of festers and becomes a disease. And also, you know, ulcers first, anxiety. That feeling causes anxiety, somni, untoward things. And so we're talking about relationships, and in this specific class up to yet, we've spoke about if we want to have good relationships, we have to deal with ourselves, you know? We have to forgive ourselves, then we can forgive others. And then we can, you know, deal with people in a normal way instead of, you know, always seeing the bad. One other point I wanted to speak about is this particular quality is mentioned in the verse Yashyastya Bhaktira Bhagavatiya Kinshina, which means that all the good qualities of demigods are manifested in a devotee. And another quality that's, it's not actually, it's like paraphrased, but it is a quality which is listed there. Another quality is integrity. You think that's a good quality, integrity?
Mm-hmm.
So let's just speak a little bit, try and speak a bit about integrity. I was reading a Bhakta Godhead magazine, and Mother Vishakha Devadasi wrote one, article on integrity. meaning of integrity. And in the third point in the verse I mentioned, it says, he is truthful. So what does integrity mean? It can mean quite a few things, but personal integrity. It means, I know most people know, but I'm just like throwing it out there. It means, the understanding is, there's four different categories she gave us, integrity, but she dealt with one particular one, that's to become whole. You know, Om Purnam Adah Purnam Idam, Purnat Purnam Udachyate, Purnasya Purnam Adaya, Purnam Eva Vashishyate. The personality of Godhead is perfect and complete, he's whole. And whatever, you know, because he's perfect and complete, because he's whole, so many perfect and complete wholes emanate from him. That's us. And many other things as well. Even though so many perfect and complete wholes emanate from him, he still remains a complete balance. And whatever's produced of the complete whole is also complete and whole in itself. So that's our natural constitutional position. And so when we develop integrity, we start to become, you know, a qualification for a devotee. And what is integrity in devotional service? It's Sanatana Dharma, isn't it? The natural constitutional position of the living entity. So by devotional service, we're naturally going to develop this quality of integrity. So Sanatana Dharma is integral with the living entity. We are part and parcel of Krishna, and developing that relationship will satisfy our search and for our occupation, and we will progress, we will become more satisfied. This is also mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.10, that, you know, all other things should be put aside and we just concentrate on the essence. And so we were saying that, you know, we're underlining those. We may not have that quality as much as we would like, because we're not fully connected with Krishna. When we're connected with Krishna, then automatically we become whole and we can develop real integrity. but until we come to that point, we have to follow the instructions of, as we said yesterday, Guru, Shada, Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. Prabhupada also was, there was one verse that he couldn't properly understand, and it was Bhagavad Gita 2.41. Does anybody know that? Vyasa Vyatmika Buddhi, Eke Ha Kuranana, Bahushaka Yanantascha, Vareyo Vya Visahinam. He says, those who are on this path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one. Those who are not on this path of devotional service, they're many branched. So this is another indication of how by following devotional service, we become wholesome. And Prabhupada, when he read the one of the Acharya's purports on this particular verse, and it explained how make the words of the spiritual master one with your heart. And you know, and this is what made Prabhupada so successful in spreading this movement. His godbrothers, they thought it meant he'll spread the holy name of the Lord in Bharat Varsh. I mean, Bharat Varsh can have two meanings. It can mean the whole world, or it can mean India. And so they took it as meaning India. Every town and village in India will become Krishna conscious. But Prabhupada didn't see it like that. He took, you know, the words of his spiritual master to heart, and consequently, by doing that, he was successful in spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. And so this is what made Prabhupada successful. He made the words of his spiritual master one with his heart, and he followed that very, very diligently. And so by doing that, he was actually nicely connected with the desire of his spiritual master. And so similarly, in our purifying, in our stage of purification, when we're not on the spontaneous platform, it's very important to follow the advice of the spiritual master. And also, you know, Maharaj was saying yesterday how the spiritual master's instruction is one. And another way of seeing that is that if somebody else speaks from Shastra, the same as the spiritual master, his instructions are also the same. There's no difference. So in devotional service, Prabhupada writes that we cannot be without knowledge. The devotee cannot be without knowledge. There's knowledge from the spiritual master, knowledge from Shastra, and knowledge from the different devotees. And so this is personal integrity. And so what about integrity of the movement? There's one verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and I couldn't find it. Well, I could, but I didn't have time. It's Prabhupada's talking about the five regulative principles. And is that right? He's talking about the one particular verse. He's talking about the things that prevent us from going forward in devotional service, the obstacles. And he paraphrases them. He doesn't say they're exactly like, you know, no meat eating, no intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling. But anyway, that's what he's saying in a paraphrased way. And he adds another one to it. And he adds, it's called kapatya. What's the word now? Straightforwardness. Mm-hmm. Kapatya means not being straightforward. He says, if we cannot be straightforward, he says, then we can't make advancement in devotional service. He says, this crookedness is... So, you know, most devotees, they don't have to necessarily read Shastra to understand what's wrong. It's just an indication. When we start practicing devotional service, and even materialists to a certain degree, we know when we're wrong. We know what to do. And so Prabhupada makes a point about this kapatya, that it puts it on the same platform as the other four regulative principles. So integrity, we have to, you know, do the right thing. And in order to do that, also, there's another verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto. Steadiness in one's own position is called piety, whereas deviation from one's position is called impiety. So how do we apply that? I mean, this is a general term. And, in the Vedas it gives many instructions on people at different levels in spiritual advancement. And it's saying that whatever stage we are in our advancement, we should follow the rules and regulations for that particular order. And then gradually we can move up to the next stage, and to the next stage. And to try and act beyond our capacity, or under our particular capacity, is called impiety. And so in devotional service, that's also the same. That, you know, sometimes in devotional service, we want to do everything straight away, or we want to be seen as a devotee that we're not. So this is also integrity. This is where I am. Let me just work from that platform, and then we can go forward. So that's real devotional service. You know, if we're not actually accepting where we're at, how can we go forward? And this also, this is caused by comparisons. A devotee doesn't compare himself to other devotees. As soon as we start comparing, we miss the whole point. Did I say this yesterday? I did, I think, about customising. Mm. How, you know, Krishna's treating every devotee in an individual way. So we have to have enough integrity to see how is Krishna dealing with me and work from that platform. So we don't compare ourselves to the service of others. I was listening to one seminar by Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. This was in, I think it was about 1999 or 2000. And he was talking about relationships, actually, and particularly about relationships between the general devotees and the leaders. And he really put the leaders through it, actually, over in that seminar. In a nice way, but... And one particular point, he said, we can find... He said, I want you to do an experiment. He said, if you've got any problems or any, mental grievance, specifically, you know, usually it's in the mind, he said, I want you to go before the deity and pray to the deity to give you intelligence to deal with the situation. Does anybody do that sometimes? He says, and then I want you to put yourself in the deity's position and listen to your own, your own prayer, and then see what happens. And so when I did that, I realised that I actually know the answers. As soon as you become detached from the actual, attachment that's keeping you from understanding what to do, as soon as you become detached, you're dealing with somebody else now, then you know the answer. So, it's the attachments that causes the misunderstandings. We're attached to a certain situation. We're, bodily identification again. So some symptoms of external integrity, or outer integrity, or integrity within the movement. We should have such things as peace, if we're actually connected properly to the movement, peace, contentment, satisfied with one's position in life, one is interested in others, and peaceful and tolerant of them. One who is cooperative and eager to share with others, and one has a feeling of belonging. This sort of integrity gradually leads to authenticity, or a oneness between one's values and one's actions. So, as devotees, it's so important to, as well as looking after our own integrity, making other people feel they have a place in devotional service, wherever that may be. Making them feel that whatever they're doing is actually valuable. I know in the early days of my devotional service, I had a good temple president. He didn't put that trip on me, but I know that generally It was the pioneering stage, you know, the gold rush, yahoo! You know, everybody ran out, they took the stakes, this is my plot, this is where I'm going to have my temple, and I'm the you know, if we go to a temple in Leicester, this is Leicester's mine. So, you know, it was more or less a stage of achievement. Achieving, it was the project was important, is that right? Very important. And, you know, devotees came, they lasted for a few years, and then they moved on. Some got married, some left the movement, some stayed, but there was a big turnover of devotees. And then in the mid-90s, maybe early 90s, you know, the gold rush was over. You know, everybody had got reasonably staked out the places, and the devotees didn't come anymore. They didn't come through the usual channels. The mood had changed in society. You know, people used to come in the early 80s and 70s, and very quickly, you wouldn't have to say too much. They came a few times to the temple and be ready for joining, shaving up. I'll give it a try. That sort of outlook. Because people were adventurous. But then, as things changed in the 90s, then people didn't come like that. And we couldn't make devotees, because we're still in that same situation of the project comes first. You know, qualified people would come, but they didn't live up to our expectations. So therefore, we didn't spend time. And so this is related to also the integrity of having enough integrity to see where somebody is situated and encouraging a person from that, making that person feel part of this movement, making them feel useful. So that's now becoming more and more practice, that we're having to become more and more congregationally orientated. And so, you know, relationships are becoming more important. Before, the relationship was through service. That, you know, you go out with the devotees, maybe travelling Sankirtan, and it's, you know, let's be fair, it's pretty superficial, isn't it? Yeah. You know what I mean? You know, you get in the van, this is the only time I've got to listen to some tapes. You know, you don't want to disturb the others chanting his japa. And so, you know, all the way, you know, you might drive, you know, 150 miles or something like that, and not a word spoken, but I did my hearing. And the other one, you know, even back to see, like, and anyway, this is one, and then, you know. And then we get there and we're so busy getting the books out and getting out there and making sure that we get the burger in for the evening and somebody's got to stop back and cook, you know. And we get out on Sankirtan and we, you know, probably the words are, that's your spot. And then somebody comes in the office and talks to you, Prabhu, this is Maya. Concentrate on your service, will you? I'm having a heart attack. Pa-boom. And then we go back at night and we've had a full day of dealing with others, you know, all people out there. That, you know, we just want to take some prasadam and do some. I haven't done my reading. And so we never really get to know one another. But, you know, I remember Roy Hinanda, and he said to me, I went on the back to go, he says, you know, we can think, you know. You've got to give yourself time to think. I thought, really? You know, because on the back to go, everything's like one thing after another. You don't even have time to think. But at some point, we have to start thinking, you know, thinking about what will really make this movement go forward is now we're on the platform of, you know, the devotees are making the movement up. If we don't deal with devotees, then we don't have a movement. We just have some bricks and mortar. And then it becomes like, you know, further down the line, it becomes a nightclub or something like that. It used to be a bowling alley, but that was... So yeah, now we're dealing with the individuals in the movement. And anyway, we've got 6 minutes for some questions. If anybody wants to... Or any comments? Anybody any comments?
I could just say maybe one thing is that in terms of that verse 10:14:8, Tatena Kampamsa Sulakshmana, as I understand it, Lord Brahma is saying that, you know, when things happen to us, well, whatever happens really, but in the context of forgiveness, which you brought it up in, when things happen to us which people would think could be forgivable, we might have to exercise some forgiveness. But actually, we were responsible for those things. So in a sense at least, the person who has done the thing, you know, not nice thing to us, which we could forgive, you know, like that. But actually, it's not exactly just the responsibility of that person. I mean, certainly not completely, just like they independently did something to us, and therefore we could or should or might forgive them. But we caused it to happen. So in that sense, because we caused it to happen, I mean, in a simple example, if someone comes and shouts at you, I was going to say punches you in the nose, let's not get into that. Someone comes and just verbally abuses you. Arguably, it has happened because I verbally abused someone in the past. So in a certain sense, I don't really need to forgive the person because it was me. I, you know, it's almost like I shouted at myself or punched myself in the nose or something like that. And then the whole context of forgiveness becomes different. Because you can only forgive people, I think, if they're truly culpable of something wrong themselves, independent of our position. Our position is basically innocent. Therefore, we have, in a certain sense, we have the right to feel offended. And then on the basis of that, possibly forgive. Just a thought.
Yeah. Thank you, Maharaj.
Yeah. Thank you very much for your presentation. I really enjoyed that, especially the quotes. They were really nice. And I was just thinking in relation to what Bhakti Chaitanya Swami was saying, that was really nice. I was thinking that often we're thinking, I've got to tolerate this person, I've got to tolerate that person. And we very rarely stop to think, actually, everyone's tolerating me. And so I was thinking there's a really nice verse which I find is a helpful meditation in the Ishapanishad. You know, that's one who sees everything in relationship to the Supreme Lord, who sees all living entities as his parts and parcels, and who sees the Supreme Lord within everything, never hates anything or any being. So I was thinking that relates to what Maharaj was saying, which actually is, this is an arrangement by Krishna for us to learn, and if we can see that Krishna's behind everything, and ultimately, like Maharaj says, that we're behind everything, we've caused that to happen, then we don't become disturbed with others, because we understand that actually it's my fault. And then Lord Brahma is saying that patiently tolerating both good and bad reactions, if I tolerate those things, and all the while surrendering to you within the core of my heart, then the kingdom of God becomes the rightful claim. And in the Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada actually says this should be the guide for all devotees.
Right.
It's a very important verse. It says the guide. I was just thinking in relation to yesterday when, I think it was yourself, you were asking, who was asking, have we ever heard something which is stuck in the mind? Who was asking that yesterday?
Me.
That was yourself. So when I first joined the temple, I had one devotee who was my Sanktam partner, and Chaitanyananda. And he was always reading Prabhupada's books. He was very Shastric. And his book that he used to study was Nectar of Devotion. He always used to quote that verse and say, Prabhupada says, this should be the guide of all devotees. So I remember that was something that I'd heard that had stuck with me. So I just remembered that when Maharaj was saying that. Then if we really have that as our guide, then we will see everything in relationship to Krishna and understand that whatever happens is ultimately our responsibility, and we shouldn't blame others. No, so just...
Yeah, I mean, these quotes that I quoted, and it's like showing that, you know, not everybody understands Vaishnava philosophy, and maybe we might find difficulty sometimes applying it, but just showing that, you know, this quality of forgiveness is so important, that we learn to forgive others. I mean, as far as that goes, I remember I was doing Sankirtan, and I had one partner, and he didn't used to get fired up very often. He was pretty savvy, but one day he had a row with the cook in the temple, and eventually he punched him. He punched the cook, and then he got in the car, and the cook was, you know, came running after him, and we drove off. I didn't know what had happened at that time, actually. I saw him get in the car in a rush. And then we went on Sankirtan, and we got out of the car, we got his trolley and books, and the first door he came to, ding dong, and the door opened, and he started talking, and somebody punched him straight in the face, the first door. So, you know, this is what we're saying, you know, we have to tolerate that we deserve that because we've done it to others. That matters, yeah, though. Yeah?
I just had a reflection about a couple of things that you said, and I thought it was really, really nice. At the beginning you said some people might say sorry, but stronger people will forgive. So that I thought it was very powerful, and the ability to be able to forgive devotees is something, you know, I feel I need to practice personally, so thank you so much for sharing. And then the second point that I noted and I thought was really nice was, as devotees, we need to make other devotees feel that whatever they are doing is valuable.
Yeah.
And then it builds up the community, and it builds up the respect between devotees. And thank you so much for sharing. It was very interesting.
Yeah, Jai Pataka Maharaj, before he joined, he said his first person he met was Jayananda, and Jayananda used to engage everybody and help him with a cart, and he walked up, you know, and he said, are you good at hammering? He said, I think so. And so he gave him a hammer, and he says, here, knock that nail in there. And he said, wow. You know, and he said, oh, you know, really hammered. So it's like that simple thing, but that's the mood, isn't it? We all like to be glorified, even if it's the most simple little thing.
Maharaj, could you just expand a little bit on actually the attitude we need to have to cultivate devotional service? Like, should we approach in a sense like, okay, I want that service, why should I not have that service? Or should we just wait for Krishna to give us something? Should we be like, okay, the GBC is wrong, we should change this, we should change that, or should we like more like introspect on ourselves and try to change?
You mean if we want to do a certain service, or we feel that, you know, we're not being engaged properly?
Yeah.
Should we question that?
Yeah, should we question that?
Or should we just accept that this is coming from Krishna?
Yeah.
Well, we're allowed to question, providing it's in a proper mood.
Mm-hmm.
If we, you know, Vaishnava etiquette means that we can challenge, but it has to be, it's not a challenge really, it's a query, and you know, we have to make sure that we're properly engaged as far as we can understand, and we can relate that to our authority, and then it can be discussed. So we may actually, you know, especially if we've been around for a while, we may know what we need, and we can relate that to our authority to engage us in that way, or put it past him to see what he thinks. So we can always do that. I remember, anyway, I'm not going into details, but I moved from one place to another, and I'd been around for quite a while, and I knew what I wanted. Well, I thought I knew what I wanted, anyway, and I weren't given that opportunity. You know what I mean? So I know what it's like to be frustrated. And eventually what you do is, you have to save yourself. You think, oh, no, I'm going to do this. Sorry. And then, you know, because you get labelled as being, you get blacklisted if you're not careful. So, you know, a leader's really responsible that he gives the is the devotee who is taken care of, chance to speak. You know, we're talking with people who come to devotional service. They may be fresh to the process, but they still have intelligence. And even more so now, people who come in, they're very thoughtful. They don't come otherwise. Mm-hmm. And so we have to really think that it's not a case of, just following the leader anymore, but with intelligence. In fact, you know, Prabhupada didn't use that that way of dealing. Anybody who came, as far as what I've read about Srila Prabhupada, is he used to engage them according to their nature. Mm-hmm. And he'd be satisfied with that. And then, you know, even once somebody came to the temple and they said, shall I take my shoes off? He said, I didn't say you had to take your shoes off. You know what I mean? He was so liberal in the beginning. But then when, depending on the nature of the devotee, he would deal with the devotees in a different way. And like with some devotees, he'd be very, very heavy if they didn't do what he told them, because he knew he needed to deal with them like that. And with others, he wouldn't do that. But for ourselves, we should speak. Why not? And that'll be good for us. We may find that we've got the wrong idea about ourselves, what will be really good for us. And at the end of the day, there's also the other point that there's emergency situations. Sometimes things need doing and we have to be flexible. Anyway, we come to a common agreement with the leader. In a submissive way, of course. Yeah?
Thank you for your presentation and the contributions of others. People are talking about that verse of Lord Brahma about, you know, tolerating the troubles that come. I was in one class where somebody was saying that somebody did a study of different devotees who left the movement and interviewed them for different reasons. And he came to the conclusion that the reason why people left was their inability to assimilate that idea. And that was very powerful to me to hear that.
Yeah, putting the blame somewhere else. Anything else? Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. You talked also about, you said the five principles, so you talked about the quality of integrity, and then you said that this is wholeness, and that we are actually whole already. But I was wondering, how do we know if sometimes you don't really feel whole, and at certain points you do feel very, very whole and very, very blissful, but then it's not constant. And then how do we get to that point? And how do we know if we are being, if we are practicing integrity?
Well, we usually feel wholesome and satisfied and complete, you know, just after a feast. Does anybody have that feeling? You've had a really good feast, think, wow. You know, in the Christian say, my cup runneth over. So, you know, when we engage in devotional service, whatever it is, whether it's taking the feast, we'll feel like that. We'll feel, I don't really need anything else. I'm satisfied. And so that's the city. That's the problem, is that, you know, we're not fully engaged. There's something getting in the way, and that causes the problem, that causes a disturbance of mind and not feeling connected, and so we have to work with those things. If we're actually, you know, a Krishna conscious person, and Prabhupada explains in that he can sit down anywhere and be satisfied. He's just satisfied, you know. We don't need anything else. you know, we've got so many desires in the heart. Which keep coming up, and they're you know, and if the desires are fulfilled, we'll feel some temporary completeness. Ah, I got what I wanted, but because it's not what we really need, it'll only last some short while, and there'll be another disturbance like that. So Krishna's having to, you know, deal with. As I mentioned yesterday, that he sometimes has to give us in order to keep us satisfied. And then eventually, when we become, you know, when we realise that Krishna's fulfilling what we need, we start to become more surrendered. But anyway, coming back to the point is that, you know, if we're feeling incomplete, just be introspective of the way we've been thinking and what we're desiring. You know, we can also bounce it off other devotees. And if we read regularly, we'll get the answer. If we read Prabhupada's books regularly, we'll always get the answer. It doesn't matter where we read, it'll be there. The books are so complete. Yeah?
Raj, we were discussing forgiveness a lot today, but it seems somehow, well, we didn't really go towards the second part of that, which discusses or addresses how we should try to rectify the situation if possible. The first part is, of course, understanding the gravity of forgiveness. You know, begging for forgiveness. Well, that's one part of it. But the other part is that we should also recognize, maybe so as to not repeat that in future, that there has to be some kind of rectification or measures that we should take so that, you know, for ourselves, we won't repeat that in the future. Or somehow, if it's to aid others, you know, how we could possibly prevent those situations from coming up again and again within our community or our congregation. You know, if people are in a position of suffering while they're still very fresh in Krishna consciousness, we should be looking towards measures, in one sense, to give them that kind of guidance and protection that they're seeking. And I was mentioning to Magrida yesterday that when you were speaking in class yesterday, one of those things that really impacted me, although it wasn't something I heard, it was something he did. I was a very fresh person in Krishna consciousness. I'd seen the way he acted in a situation, particularly the way he gave us some space. He just made a comment in passing, almost a sarcastic remark, saying that, you know, there's place for ladies as well in Krishna consciousness. And but it wasn't just words. It's the way he actually gave us that space to be there and showed us that we're welcome, everyone's welcome in Krishna consciousness. That also made me reflect on the integrity part of things, because having a devotee who's actually practicing, I can see this, all of our shastras in action. We left a very deep impact on it as a new person coming into the movement. This is not just theoretical. And I think, you know, having that kind of those examples really shape us and kind of solidify us in Krishna consciousness. So part of that, part of forgiveness, like, we've done something wrong, but trying to rectify it, trying to make things better, especially from all the kind of questions that we had yesterday coming from our community, we should also be thinking maybe something along those lines. How can we actually do, how can we actually move forward with that?
Yeah, we have to set an example. Achar. Achar becomes, is the best type of preaching. So, you know, there's also there's the Vani and the Vapu, and Vani is always given greater importance. But also, when the spiritual master comes or leading devotee, we get great inspiration from their example. We see, you know, that it works. Is that what you're saying?
Well, you know, not just the spiritual master. When we look at any senior devotees, devotees, of course, who are older than us, who've been practicing longer than us, and we see that this works. For example, living in Radhadesh, I had Hriday Chaitanya Prabhu as the temple president. And for me, watching his example every day, constantly, in everything that he did, how he dealt with anyone, regardless of how new or how old they were in the movement, just the way he dealt with people, let alone devotees, you know, really left a deep impact, for example. And having those examples are obviously beneficial.
Mm.
And it's not just when someone visits, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's one understanding that, you know, devotees have the highest principles, but first of all, we have to become human beings. Because sometimes, you know, we don't act on the human platform. You know, we have to deal with people in an appropriate way. It doesn't matter who they are. And that can get sometimes misunderstanding of the philosophy means that we think we've got a right to not do that. Same as Maharaj was saying yesterday when he said, "Do you eat meat?" And he said, "You're a pig." You know what I mean? It's like... Lord Kapila Dev, he mentions that in the third canto that we should respect all living entities, right from the Indra Gopa right up to the pure devotee. But every in a suitable way, we respect them according to their situation. So a devotee learns to do that. He sees everything as part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he sees the super soul in everybody's heart. So from that platform he can deal with everybody without pride and egoism as a servant. You know, Prabhupada, he was once in his room, and you may have heard this, he was looking at the floor. And Shruti Kirti came in and he looked. He says, "What are you looking at, Prabhupada?" "You know that?" I heard it was a spider. Is that right? Anyway, there was a small little living entity. And he says, I've been watching that living entity for quite some time. He says, "He's hungry. Feed him." So he was thinking about, you know, he was actually putting himself in the situation of that living entity. I'm thinking, you know, he's in this place, he's got nothing to eat. And so, you know, that's one of the empathy is the quality of a devotee. And then when there's empathy, there's compassion. Put ourselves in the position of the person we're dealing with, and it's quite easy to act nicely. Okay, anything else? Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Jai. Prabhupada Ki Jai.
His Holiness Dayananda Swami Ki. Okay, so just give me a second, please. So, firstly, you heard that His Holiness Dayananda Maharaj is leaving. So, if you'd like to go and say farewell, then please do so. But just before you do go, just to let you know that breakfast will be served now, next door. And there will also be prasadam served at 12 o'clock. So you don't have to fill yourself up to the max. Eat whatever you need, of course, but there will be prasadam served at 12. And then we'll meet back here at 9:45 for the last session with His Holiness Bhakti Chaitanya Swami, which will be from 9:45 till 11. And then at 11 o'clock, we're going to ask everyone to give some reflections. Things that have really stuck in their consciousness from the weekend, a point you've heard, or, you know, something that's inspired you. So we're going to ask everyone if they'd like to give their reflections, and we're going to do a few thank yous, and then we'll let everyone know what's going to happen next after that. But for the time being, if you'd like to go and take breakfast and say farewell to Dayananda Maharaj, then you can do so. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Shri Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Ki. Giri Govardhan Ki. Nitai Gaurupada Mandev.